You are Locked On Pirates, your daily Pittsburgh Pirates podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's going on, everybody, and welcome back to Locked On Pirates. I am, of course, your host, Ethan Smith, who, of course, always does the most. I hope you're all having a wonderful Thursday, May 20th. I almost forgot today's date, but it's okay. I think we all really know what days these come out, Monday through Friday, of course. And, of course, today's episode is brought to you by Locker Room. Locker Room is changing the way we talk sports. You can see NBA rooms, all about the NBA playoffs, NHL, UFC, watch parties, pretty much anything. And today's guest has joined me in a ton of the locker rooms that I've been in. Download the Locker Room app from the iOS App Store and find one of our Locked On rooms. And again, that's Locker Room, changing the way we talk sports. And on today's podcast, we have not the host of Locked On Braves, but the host of Locked On Grizzlies, but a Braves fan himself in the form of Sean Coleman. How are you doing today, Sean?
Hey, what's going on? How are you doing today, Ethan?
Well, after last night, I mean, I know you're doing okay. Your Grizzlies picked up a huge victory. And, you know, as a Clippers fan, I was on Locked On Clips this week. I like the result of the Lakers-Warriors game. So we're doing good in the basketball department. But as far as baseball goes, before we even get into the Pirates and the Braves, what is up with all these no-hitters, Sean? Like, is the no-hitter officially dead now? Like, is this just something we should expect, like, every single week?
It's kind of like what Russell Westbrook did to the triple-double a few years back in basketball, right? Like, it's becoming so commonplace that, you know, the novelty or the reverence of it isn't there. It just straightforward is the offense is continuing to struggle. And I mean, that's what stands out to me. I think another thing that comes into play is that it seems that the offense, the batters, are – number one, they were boosted by that 60 short game sample size last year. Their ability to get back into the groove of things probably is going to be a little bit slower than the pitching. And I think that you're seeing some of these pitchers, you know, Corey Kluber and others who, you know, they didn't pitch that much last year. It's been a while since some of these hitters have seen their stuff. And so I just think in general, it's simply because of how historically bad the offense across the board has been. I don't know how much the new baseball, you know, scientifically or technically is having on that. But I think that, you know, coming off of last season into the normal season again, it's having more of an impact on hitters. And obviously, you know, as we always know, if you're facing a pitcher for the first time, the pitcher typically has the advantage. I think a lot of that has to play with into it as well.
Yeah, and I mean, it's crazy because you see the guys that have done it, and it's not like the guys you'd expect to do it. Like
exactly.
Spencer Turnbull for the Detroit Tigers. Like, I'm going to be honest, if you said he was going to pitch a no-hitter before the season started, people probably would have called you crazy.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, Corey Kluber comes back, and it's the crazy part, and not to take shots at teams or whatever, but the Rangers and the Mariners so far, I believe, have tallied four of those six no-hitters. Yeah. I also count the Madison Bumgarner no-hitter. I don't know if some people do or not. He pitched
a no-hitter. I don't count that no-hitter for obvious reasons.
He just missed the two innings?
It's because it was against the Braves.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. Yeah. Breaking news, guys. Sean Coleman does not count the Madison Bumgarner no-hitter because it was against the Atlanta Braves. But speaking of the Atlanta Braves now, we look into a lot of what baseball has looked like so far. We're in the middle of May. I'd still say it's early. I mean, most teams are still like 40 or 50 games in. And, you know, it's kind of interesting when you look at it because Atlanta currently sits at 20-23. So some people with the NL East being kind of a stronger division than the NL Central would be kind of flipping out about that. But as far as I'm concerned, I think 20-23, as I pull it up right now, only has them three games out of first place. So how are Atlanta Braves fans feeling with the team right now as things are going?
Well, it's frustrating, you know, right? And a lot of that has to do with coming. If you look at it from the perspective of the fact that we were 3-1 in the NLCS last year, should have won that, probably would have been favorites in the World Series as that happened. From that perspective, this far of a drop off this early in the season, you know, it's kind of like the sky is falling. But when you really also look at how our pitching has struggled, specifically the bullpen, starting pitching also to an extent, but also how really Ronald Acuña Jr. and Austin Riley are the only ones who have really performed up to or above what was expected of them so far this season. 20-23 doesn't sound that bad. At the end of the day, I think that it's my feeling is, okay, I can get with it. But I've kind of been like, okay, we're already in late May. We're this record basically fourth of the way through the season. With how much the rest of the NL East has struggled, it wouldn't surprise me if the Braves, I still think the Braves are the most talented team. I think they get the hot streak going to be right there at the end to probably win the division still. But I in no way, shape, or form have as much expectations for postseason success with this team that I did with the 2019 or 2020 teams.
Well, and I had who was it that I had? I had somebody on the pod, or it was Ben Kaspic of Locked On Giants last week, and I said, four-game series, this is probably the time for the Giants to just go ahead and take another step forward and stuff. We split that series over here in Pittsburgh. The Braves, for example, in this series should look at this series as a chance to get over 500. I tell this to my listeners all the time, and they understand it, and that's the great thing about my listeners. This team is not supposed to be winning, but they're remaining competitive in not winning, if that makes sense. Like, over the past three losses we've had, the Giants beat us 4-1, Cardinals 5-2, Cardinals 8-5. It's like, okay, so you're not getting blown out. The only team that's really blown us out all year is the Cincinnati Reds, and that's happened three or four separate times now. But you look at the matchups in terms of pitching going into the series tonight. Obviously, Drew Smyly and Will Crow will go at it, two guys that are kind of on the snide like a little bit. Then you get an interesting one on Friday night with two Andersons, ironically. You get Tyler and Ian Anderson taking on each other, who have both looked very solid. Undecided for the Braves, apparently, on Saturday against Mitch Keller. And then Sunday, we have, of course, see Max Fried and JT Brubaker, which should be another good one. How do you expect this series to play out from both standpoints, like not only from the Braves, but from the Pirates?
Well, I think what it comes down to is that the Braves, in whatever form or fashion they want to do it, they need to use this series as a way to get right. You know, that's the thing that stands out to me. But the problem is that when you look at the Pirates starting staff in every game, I think, except for the last one in which Ian Anderson is there with Tyler Anderson. But in every game that you see, the Pirates starters actually have a lower ERA than the Braves starters. Now, I don't necessarily think that means the Pirates starters have been better than the Braves, but there's no pitching advantage in this series for the Braves. Like, your bullpen has been right on par with ours, if not a bit better, and the starters have been just as effective, it seems, this year so far as well. I think there's a big talent difference between both. That's nothing against the Pirates and Braves. It's just simply where they are on the competitive timeline. But what stands out to me is that the Braves are going to have another offensive player step up in this series, Ethan. It needs to be Freddie or Marcel to go forward. I would love for it to be Dansby Swanson, maybe Ozzie Albies. I think that Riley and Acuña will have a pretty good chance to continue their success this series. But overall, what stands out to me, this is the perfect time for our bullpen to get right and for a third star, Albies, Freeman, or Marcel, to use this as a launching pad to get their season going right.
Yeah, and it's from the Pirates standpoint, again, as I've said this, and I've said this now for about like a month or so after they started losing after being above 500, I said, honestly, 17-25, a lot of people would not have saw that for the Pirates at this point in the season. There's no way. Everybody said this team was going to be a 110-loss team. It'd be the worst team of all time. But they've looked competitive in almost every series, and they've beaten the best team in baseball by record on two separate occasions when they played Kansas City and San Francisco. And they also have beaten the Padres in a series. They've beaten the Cubs in a series. So it's not like this team is terrible. But one thing that I've always said now for the Pirates is every series, say it's three games, go in trying to win one. If it's four games, go in trying to win two. If they can do that and maintain that kind of success. And one thing I've also said is I've given Derek Shelton a ton of credit this year because we've had, I believe now, seven different outfielders play. Ben Gamble, Kai Tom, Gregory Polanco, Phillip Evans has even played out there, Brian Reynolds, Troy Stokes Jr., Dustin Fowler, and Anthony Alford. So actually eight. So for what it's worth, this team is not doing that bad. How could you see the Pirates winning this series?
Well, but having the better bullpen like that really stands out to me when it comes to the ability for this Pirates team to stand out. And the reason that I say that is because we have struggled in the eighth inning badly. Like, I mean, we have struggled in the eighth inning, and it's not just giving up hits, Ethan. It's giving up walks and things such as that. The way that the Pirates could really make a difference in this, I feel, is if they have the ability to deliver timely hitting, especially late in games, which unfortunately the Braves have allowed. There's just not been a lot of effort on the Braves' bullpen's end to limit offense late in games. So timely hitting late in games, I think, really stands out as a way the Pirates could do this, especially if their starters can keep us to three runs or less. If y'all get multiple quality starts out of this series, that scares me to the point that this is going to be a split or worse for the Braves, and that certainly is something that does not work out. If the Braves come out of this series with only two wins or less, that really starts to concern me a lot, and that becomes a reality if our offense cannot figure out your starters enough to get some big leads going late into the game.
And it's very possible, too. I mean, our bullpen has been very good. Also, today's episode is brought to you by Wealthfront.com. Wealthfront is trusted with over $20 billion of assets, and you can get your first $5,000 managed for free by going to Wealthfront.com/LockedOnMLB. Nice little ring to it, right? Wealthfront can create a portfolio of globally diversified, low-cost index funds personalized just for you in minutes. Say that 10 times fast. No manual trades, no picking stocks, no watching the stock market every day. They automatically handle all the investing based on preferences you control. Wealthfront can even also help you lower the taxes you pay as you invest. And again, to get your first $5,000 managed for free, go to Wealthfront.com/LockedOnMLB to start growing your savings and get started today. Today's episode is also brought to you by RockAuto.com. I'm sure Sean can agree with me. Car problems suck. So if you want to really fix it and just search for the parts yourself instead of watching someone from behind the counter do it for you, make sure you check out RockAuto.com. They have amazing selection and reliably low prices that don't price gauge like the big markets. And they have all the car parts your car will ever need. Visit RockAuto.com and tell them the Locked On Podcast Network sent you. Now, with that said, from our great sponsors, you already know what I'm about to ask you. I ask everybody this. The first-year player draft is coming up in July, and there's been a lot of mixed reactions on how this Pittsburgh Pirates team is going to handle this top pick. We've had plenty of them over our history, and I'd say one or two played out pretty well, obviously Gerrit Cole being one of them. What do the Pirates do at number one this year?
I think you go Jack Leiter, Kamar Rocker. Like, I just that's it. Now, I think that the Pirates, if they feel, and I'll be honest, I don't. As far as prospects go, when they get into the minor leagues, that's where I pay a bit more knowledge to them. As far as draft classes, my knowledge is not to the anywhere near the extent of others. But being an SEC guy, having, you know, University of Tennessee guy myself, being Jack Leiter, seeing Jack Leiter, Kamar Rocker, I think you have to go either one of them. Now, I don't know what the pick selection is. If I was in the Pirates position and I had like six or seven picks, maybe in the top 100, top 50, and it made sense to cut a deal at one to get a guy who maybe was in your top 10 so you could go get an extra guy who would maybe be in your top 100 later in the draft, I could completely understand that. That makes sense. But at the end of the day, I think that one thing that separates, and the Braves are the perfect example of this, hitting is going to translate easier than pitching when it comes to prospects. The attrition rate for prospects never really works out when it comes to pitching. But in the case of Leiter or Rocker, if the contract makes sense, I would simply go with the best talent available. And I think you can't go wrong with either one of them. I know there's risk, obviously, with both of them being pitchers, but I think the Pirates fans should be very happy that they got the number one pick in this year, and that would either be with Leiter or Rocker.
Yeah, and I mean, also, too, you look at what we already are working with in, like, the farm system, and I always like to ask my guests, too, like, who is, like, outside of the Nick Gonzalez and Quinn Priester, if you follow the farm system a little bit, who has been the most, like, or who do you think is the most, like, underrated prospect the Pirates are going to be seeing in the next couple years?
Your shortstop prospect, O'Neill Cruz is his name. Is that correct, I believe?
Yep.
Yeah. I know that he is a bit highly touted. I know that when you talk about the Pirates prospects that he's up there. But it feels like with some prospect evaluators, it's just that like he's the best of what's there with the Pirates. But I think that there's a bit more quality to his game, especially if he can stick with shortstop. I do think that there's a good left-handed bat that could potentially complement Ke'Bryan Hayes as being a duo there that maybe could be. I don't necessarily know if Cruz winds up being a middle of the order guy, but especially if he could be trusted in one of the top two spots in front of Hayes, that's that naturally grown duo that really could help out. Maybe not to the level of an Acuna or Albies, but I can speak from experience. Having a naturally brought up duo of players that you can hit in your first five batters, it makes all the difference in the world, especially for a small market like Pittsburgh.
Yeah, and O'Neal Cruz, he's seen like a lot of off-field issues that's kind of hindered his development, and he's even seen time like in the major league roster. They flirted with putting him in the outfield. He'd be the second outfielder to be 6'7" to play in the outfield, I believe, in MLB history. Of course, number one being Aaron Judge. But I mean, you look at the farm system as far as things go right now. I mean, Roenzi Contreras, who we picked up from the Jameson Taillon trade, is like leading the AA minor leagues in like every single stat right now. Like, he's absolutely ridiculous. And that's what I tell Pirates fans, is just be patient, because when you look at teams like in Atlanta, like a Chicago, like all these teams that have done it, some people would think Atlanta bought this team they had. Not really. Most of the guys in that roster are guys that they built on their own accord. So, and you have a GM, and I'll ask you your thoughts on him in a second, and Ben Cherington, that are he's a good baseball mind, and he's going to get the players that he wants in his system. How long do you really think, though, that Ben Cherington is going to take to put this Pirates team back into contention?
Well, 3 to 5 years. And the reason why I think 3 to 5 years is because I think that it's going to take, I think that hitting on a few college players in the draft is going to be a big deal. Because let's be honest, with Pittsburgh, it's probably going to take a bit longer because they're not the free agent destination that a lot of places are. I don't mean that to be negative. It's just the absolute truth from what history suggests. So hitting on a few college players certainly makes sense. But Cherington knows how to do it. Like, he was the one, I can't remember if he drafted these players, but when the Sox won it back in, was it 2017-18? But they won it back in 2018. It was because of several players that he brought up through his minor league system with the Red Sox. It didn't work out, I know, but I get my GMs. But anyway, his name was all over that Red Sox organization when they won the World Series. And it was a lot to do with homegrown talent versus their previous World Series. I think that that's a reason why he makes perfect sense for Pittsburgh. He knows the importance of building it up through the organization. So I say give it 3 to 5 years. But the other big thing, Ethan, that I think comes into the Pirates' favor in this equation, you look at Cincy, you look at Milwaukee, you look at St. Louis, you look at Chicago. Sure, you've got Arenado and you've got Yelich. But beyond that, you don't have just any farm system that is really standing out as just being supremely above the others in the division. I think Pittsburgh, through this draft, a year from now, easily could have the best prospect base in the division. And that's something that could certainly make things go forward, because a lot of these futures, you know, the Cubs are probably descending. The Cardinals window may not be that open. Cincinnati and Milwaukee, you'll see. But I think that the future of the Central also plays into Pittsburgh's favor as well.
Yeah, and it's funny because MLB.com already has us as the top-ranked prospect pool in the division as of right now. And it's not really close. I mean, Chicago, Cincinnati, St. Louis, and Milwaukee, they have guys. Like, I'm not saying they don't. Like, one guy that comes to mind just because we share a name is Ethan Small in Milwaukee. He's a pretty damn good pitcher. Chicago and all of them, of course. Chicago's will probably go up if they do decide to blow it up with the Chris Bryant and Javi Baez stuff, because, I mean, you're going to get a lot for those guys. And yes, I've already still said, and I'm still not wrong, because it still hasn't happened. It still hasn't passed the time that it can happen. I said Chris Bryant will be wearing blue and yellow, or blue and orange, by the time the year ends in New York, which would not be good for your Braves. But I have said that I think
you shut your mouth, Ethan. I mean that with all due respect.
I could see Steve Cohen getting very desperate, and if the Cubs are ready to move, I said it before the season started. I thought that's where he would end up this year if the Cubs aren't where they're at.
Ethan, it's been a pleasure, bud. Been a pleasure talking with you. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, but I mean, and then you look at the Pirates trade chips, and one of them, ironically, you brought up starting pitching. Tyler Anderson could be a nice little fit in Atlanta.
Yeah, he can. I want to say that we're going to make a move for a pitcher, but like at the end of the day, obviously, Yanoa has gone down. Yoskar Yanoa was our best pitcher, honestly, this season. And just earlier this week for Pirates fans, that's why they got that open spot on Saturday, is that he hurt his hand hitting the bench and broke his hand after his last start in Milwaukee. Yes, I do think that Tyler Anderson is the type of guy that we potentially could go after, but I don't know if the Braves are really going to go that big with the trade this year. So Anderson could make sense. Starting pitching probably is a place we could go. I still think that we wind up going bullpen over starting pitching, especially if Freed and Morton and Smiley wind up working out. But I do agree, that's the type of move that Alex Anthopoulos makes. He goes after the teams that are rebuilding with veterans because typically you can find good deals for them. So I wouldn't be surprised if there's some extra scouting going on in this Pirate series where maybe you even see like perhaps an Adam Frazier or a Tyler Anderson who could come to the Braves, especially if the Braves are struggling when it comes to offense with Frazier's versatility in the field.
And I bring this up all the time, too. If you're on Fangraphs, which I think you said you were earlier, go ahead and go look at Richard Rodriguez, our closing pitcher.
Oh, yeah.
Probably one of, if not a top five closer in baseball in terms of statistics alone.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I've already said this. I don't want to get rid of him because of the years of control that we have on him. I believe it's 3 years of control, 2 years of arbitration, and including this year.
Yeah.
But if the Braves or a team that wants a closing pitcher that bad comes with a mid-level prospect, why would you say no? I mean,
yeah.
There's a realistic option of why would you say no in that scenario? And I mean, there's a lot of different kind of factors that go into this. I mean, it just really depends on who Ben Cherington wants to keep, but I would bet on the Pirates to definitely make a move. Just like if you want to bet on anything right now, you should go on betonline.ag. There's only one place that has you covered and one place we trust. That is, of course, betonline.ag. Sean's Grizzlies. If you bet on the Grizzlies last night to beat the Spurs, you probably want some money. I almost won some money last night betting on the Lakers game. I was 2-4 on my parlay. LeBron just didn't score enough points for me and the over didn't hit. But, you know, you can always bet on whatever you'd like on betonline.ag. You can bet on baseball. You can bet on the NHL and the NBA playoffs. Hunter Hodes of Locked On Penguins has been doing an absolutely amazing job covering the Islanders-Penguins series. You can also bet on MMA, NCAA futures. They just announced a lot of big times for the top college football games, including Georgia-Clemson on 7:30 on ABC on Saturday of Labor Day weekend. So you can bet on all that kind of stuff, like who's going to win the Heisman. But before you do it, make sure you use that promo code Locked On for your 50% welcome bonus, meaning they will basically give you and guys like Sean and whoever free money to bet on whatever you would like. Just make sure you go to betonline.ag and use that promo code Locked On for your 50% welcome deposit bonus and bet responsibly. Now, here in the last segment, what I'll probably go over is I think we'll just talk about general baseball. Like, so what's been your noticeable thing? We've already talked about the no-hitters. We talked about Pirates, Braves. What else in baseball has been, like, kind of in your head just spinning around right now?
Well, one thing I'll first say is this, man, is that that was an excellent segue. Like, if I'm going to bet the over-under on clutch segues for you, you've done two of them this show so far. So that was impressive to the Bet Online ad. So good job to you, sir. You know, I'm going to be honest with you. It's fun to see some of the stars that kind of fell off last year or didn't show up last year or that people were starting to write off last year that have come back. Buster Posey comes to mind. Chris Bryant comes to mind. J.D. DeMartinez comes to mind. I know that the offense overall has struggled, but, you know, it's been awesome to see there being, you know, some excellent developments as far as these talents go. And it just reminds you that baseball is deeper than you might think that it is when it comes to the overall difference-making players. So seeing some players who many thought maybe going, you know, towards the downside of their career, some in some cases earlier than expected, seeing them start to come back and play well.
Yeah, and I mean, who has been the most surprising team to you so far? I feel like it's kind of an obvious answer at this point just because they're still like a division leader for me at least. But who's been the most like surprising team for you so far?
Two teams. I don't mean to sit here and cheat, but two teams, the Boston Red Sox and the San Francisco Giants. And I think the Giants are probably a bit more, you know, superficial or riding a good wave than the Red Sox. Because I think me and I forget his name, Jeremy Brenner. We were talking about it on Locker Room. The Giants' schedule has really played into their favor. But Boston, in terms of being a sustainable surprise, I certainly think it's there. I don't know if their pitching, Ethan, is going to remain with them, but their offense, led by Martinez and Xander Bogarts and Rafael Devers, all those guys are playing to their level. So in terms of a sustainable surprise, I think Boston can certainly stick with the Blue Jays and the Yankees, and also the Blue Jays from a Braves perspective, because they kicked our ass six times this year. I'm loving to see what the Blue Jays are doing. So the Red Sox and Giants stand out.
Well, as far as the Blue Jays are right now, they're only a game – like the AL East right now is an absolute gauntlet. I mean, Boston leads it right now, but Tampa Bay is a game back. Toronto and the Yankees are only a game and a half back.
Yep.
Which then lets me lead into another thing, is who has been the most disappointing team? I also feel like that's an obvious answer now too, but I mean, who's the most disappointing team to you?
Oh, to me, it's the Minnesota Twins. And the reason why that is, the reason why is because Nelson Cruz is still doing what he's doing, but their guys have not developed. Byron Buxton was finally having his standout year. He goes down, unfortunately. Also the Angels. And the reason why I say the Angels more than anything, Shohei Ohtani has been an absolute revelation this year for all positive reasons. Just like Trout, you've got the best player in baseball and the best emerging, like, buzz player in baseball who's creating all the headlines, as he should be, in Ohtani, and they're playing in LA, which I've got no problem with. They're playing for the Angels. Kudos to the Angels for getting them. But they can't make the playoffs. And now Trout's out 6 to 8 weeks. So I would say the Angels, with the natural talents that they have and also the collection of talent the Twins have, has been the biggest disappointment.
Yeah, and I've already heard stories, too, that the Twins are, like, almost already about to just start shopping people, like Cruz.
Yeah.
And
I'm so glad that Josh Donaldson deal didn't go through with the Braves. They made the right decision going with Ozuna, and they basically have to pay him half of what they did to Donaldson.
Yep. And I mean, you also look at how things are shaping out. Like, I mean, would you still say that most of these divisions are obviously undecided because there's still a lot of time left? But like with the teams that are at the top of these divisions, is that who you would expect to stay there?
Yeah. I think eventually somebody will overtake Boston. I do think that the division's just going. I think that, you know, going through the Padres and the Dodgers eventually, I don't think the Giants still have played the Dodgers this year.
They play them seven times in the next week and a half.
There we go. Yeah, so that's going to be a big test. That's going to be kind of a litmus test for you. Sorry I haven't looked at these schedules, but the Giants I'm not that faithful in. I think the Cardinals have established enough within themselves that I think the Brewers are going to give them a run, especially with Yelich and Urrea back on their way. But I think the Braves will wind up giving the Mets a run. So I would probably put the Giants, the Red Sox, and the Mets as the most likely teams to have a challenge or possibly be overcome. I still think also Houston, who I think they may either be tied or Oakland. Yeah, I think Houston has more talent than Oakland. They'll shine through eventually as well.
Now, what's funny about that, about a lot of these divisions, ironically, and the AL West actually is one of them, a lot of these divisions are very interesting because the only team in the NL East that has a positive run differential is the Miami Marlins, and they're fourth. The only team in the AL West that has a positive run differential is the Houston Astros, ironically, by a lot. Like,
yeah.
The Marlins only have a +2 run differential. The Astros, a game and a half back out of first place, have a +62 run differential.
Yeah, which is Houston's a top five team in baseball, in my opinion. Houston's clearly a top five team in baseball.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, I guess, too, like, as you've seen through what's going on now in May and everything, who would still be, like, your World Series pick from AL and NL?
And so I picked the Yankees to begin the year, and I put the White Sox behind them and then the Astros behind them. I'll still stick with the Yankees because Gerrit Cole has been absolutely awesome. I think their lineup will eventually find it. I'll put the Astros ahead of the White Sox because I won't say what I want to say about Tony La Russa on your podcast out of respect, But I think that while that may not necessarily have that big of an issue to these professional players, it sucks to see what's going on there. So I'll put Houston Yankees up there. I'll still go Yankees. And at the end of the day in the NL, I think it's still going to be the Dodgers. They kind of righted the ship. Gavin Lux has emerged, is having a better year, you know, in support as well. And so, you know, it's the supporting cast right now instead of the stars for LA that are kind of emerging. Once the Bellingers and the Betts and the Seegers and everybody like that get going again, they're going to be just fine. I know they lost Dustin May, but I would still probably say we get that Yankees Dodgers series, though I wouldn't be surprised for a Dodgers Astros rematch, which, of course, would be the much more narrative friendly matchup.
So. Yes. And I always hate Gavin Lux's name being brought up because, I mean, you probably know this story. I think I've mentioned it to you before on Locker Room, but Felipe Vasquez, the terrible human that he is, we were trying to trade him that year because he was absolutely crazy. And the Dodgers offered us Gavin Lux. And I said, do it. Slam that door shut. Do it right now. They didn't do it. And I was like, okay, well, cool. We still have a top level level closer in baseball, whatever. Week and a half later, he does everything that happened that I don't even want to mention because it's disgusting. And he's now out of baseball for the right reasons and where he needs to be. Obviously, you have Richard Rodriguez now, too. That's why I say it's kind of weird, because obviously Richard Rodriguez is a great human being. He's not even close to being compared to the human being that Vasquez is. But if you have the chance to trade a top level closer again after seeing this happen to you 2.5 years ago, you might want to do it just because of like pure factors that factor into it. My World Series pick, by the way, ironically, is still White Sox. I actually had the Braves in there, but as you've mentioned, I just don't know if this team has that postseason acumen. So I would say probably White Sox Dodgers, which would be a very interesting series because most people don't want to see the Dodgers again. And then I don't think people really want to root for Tony La Russa. So it'd be kind of one of those very weird World Series that you would be seeing. But to leave it and end it at that, where can we find you on Twitter, Sean?
Yeah, you can find me at StatsSAC. I write for Talking Chop over at SB Nation. I do Locked On Grizzlies. I will promote, not to, because I love his work, Locked On Braves host Dylan Short as well. He is awesome. So if you are a Braves fan, and I will also say, Ethan, it has been a pleasure getting to know you, and I'll end on this. You bring up Felipe Vasquez. Again, not going to get into just the horrific revelations for him, but I badly wanted the Braves to give up a top prospect for him so they could control him through this run to help out our bullpen. So I was right there in that boat, and I will say from experience, when we traded Craig Kimbrell after a year of extending him in his second contract, when you are a team that's rebuilding, a great closer under control is the best trade chip you can have because it's such a volatile piece that is so valuable when it's on. Get rid of it for a long-term piece. So, you know, if Rodriguez winds up being consistent this year, hopefully they learned their lessons, trade him off, maybe to the Braves. But, Ethan, it's been a pleasure, as always.
Of course. And before we leave you guys, make sure, of course, that you check out Peter Bukowski on the Locked On Today podcast. Of course, as I say every time, make sure you check on him mentally because he is the host of Locked On Packers. So we have no idea what's going on with Aaron Rodgers, but he gives you all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes every morning, every day. He's been doing absolutely
on there today. I didn't mean to interrupt, but I'm on there today. Locked On Grizzlies on there today.
Sean is on there today. So, yes, thank you so much, Sean. I hope you have a great rest of your Thursday. And, guys, I will be back with you tomorrow on Friday, probably recapping game one of this Braves series and seeing what else is going on in the world of Pirates. And I will catch you guys on the flip side.